Hello, welcome to Sunday Afternoon on Revolution Radio. I'm Stephen Robertson. This is Cancel the Cabal. I have two very special guests, special friends of mine. First, I have just met recently here. Her name is Cheryl Kennedy. She's a contributor to U.S. Independent. And the second is the founder of U.S. Independent, Suzanne Pozell. So, welcome, ladies.
Hi, how are you, Stephen and Suzanne?
Hello, thank you for having us.
Oh, I wouldn't miss this for the world. I will bet you two women are just pistols. Well, I know Suzanne's a pistol, but I'm almost betting that Cheryl is herself.
Yeah, you could say that.
Yeah. Well, today's discussion is going to be on psychopaths and sociopaths. How should we start this off? I also need to say that Suzanne is also the founder of Occupy Corporatism, OccupyCorporatism.com. That's how she can be contacted, or Facebook, or Twitter, or LinkedIn, or probably even a dozen more social networks.
Pretty much.
Pretty much? At least a dozen?
At least a dozen. Okay. Information should be accessible.
Yes. And with some of these rumors flying around from these psychopaths and sociopaths here lately, information might be gold. Very, very, very soon here, but I wouldn't swear to it or bet the farm on it, but who knows, they might try. Well, they have been censoring us for a while now, but they're looks like they're stepping up their efforts.
Yeah, with the net neutrality.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how much, you know, I don't like to, I mean, there's numerous times I say, like, I've been in court where I've fought numerous criminals, which generally are attorneys or judges or people of that nature. And you don't realize how criminally insane these people are. And, you know, I would usually reference most people as sociopaths, but generally I don't really know who's a sociopath or a psychopath or whatever, but they are criminally insane and they lie continually, which is really the basis of sociopaths or psychopaths, and their lacking conscience they have for other people. And that's why you have so many people in the world, you know, be it in the U.S. or overseas, being harmed by the corruption that's been created, and how really these predators are really in our government everywhere, in all the government offices, and many of them are sociopaths and psychopaths and criminally insane people. And unfortunately, we've been living in a society where you feel you're in a civilized society, but it's really not civilized, you know, and I think that's where there's this fine line, and it's because it's all underhanded, uncivilized acts, you know, creating trauma and using trauma as a weapon to cause, you know, allow them to steal people, steal property, assets, whatever they want to steal, you know. So it's just how the whole realm of what's happened in our own country, the subversion of our government, and the people who are turn a blind eye people to the harm that's been perpetrated here and how they've benefited from it.
Yes.
So, I mean, it's a really serious problem. It's a really serious problem.
Yes, it is. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You can go ahead.
Well,
go ahead.
No, I just wanted to mention, I just wanted to expand on something you just happened to mention there. People standing on the sides, that's an actual psychological effect of the bystander effect. And the actions of the people standing on the sides depend on how their psyche is, how their personality is, you know?
Well, that's very true. And, you know, I would look at this numerous times, you know, and because, I mean, I've been in court where, like, originally when I really got involved is because I'm harmed as a victim, which started in really 2004 when I'm defrauded by this attorney, but I didn't find out about it until 2 years later. But, you know, and I'm thrown in this courthouse and this judge is involved. also in how the crime is perpetrated. And then I kept being harmed by this judge repeatedly. And, you know, so at first, you know, I would look at, like, you know, I don't know how many people I encountered in this courthouse, numerous judges, numerous attorneys who rather keep preying upon me, you know, like I'm prey. And it's really that predator-prey mentality. They're preying on you, and they are preying on you. And it's to harm you, it's to injure you. If they can kill you, they will. I mean, that is the mentality. And you know, and these are all people who generally would look like they're, oh, I'm a judge or I'm a trainee. You know, they look like they're these normal people, you know, in their suits or their robes. But they are abnormal. You know, they are real predators, and they're harming so many people. It's unbelievable what they're doing to these people, in these courts especially. And I would look at it and I would say, gosh, you know, don't the other people realize what's going on here? And my case started in San Mateo County in California, and then went to a New York court in the Ulster County Supreme Court. And there, the county clerk's office is separate from the court, and it's a much smaller situation. And I had a judge there assigned to this case named Judge Gerald Connolly, and he's out of Albany, actually, out of the Albany Supreme Court. And I and because it was a smaller setting, right, I could really see, because my crime traveled from there, it's traveled to here, and now foreclosure fraud that has so much crime in it, it's unbelievable, that I would sit and I'd look at these people, and I could tell the people who would try to help me, but if, even if they were trying to help me, they knew it was really crooked. You know, they knew, and then you knew the ones who were more crooked, covering up what's going on. And, you know, and I say, you know, these people are here, they're working, you know, and they're looking for their paycheck, you know, but you're working in this environment that's totally corrupt beyond belief, you know, and there's just millions of criminals, you know, operating, and it's just organized crime.
Yes, it
you
is.
You know, and,
yeah.
And that's really what's happened, you know, in all these counties, and be it, you know, really, it's in every county in every state.
Yes,
every
it is.
County. And it really got exasperated with the foreclosures, because that's, and it's that, that, it's that still, like, if you, you know, we have, now, one of the things I always stood up, I always took my rights, you know, when I was in fighting in 2006 initially, this is when the Bush administration was in office. And I started complaining. I'm like, what in the world's going on here? You know, what am I in? I would always defend my constitutional rights, any rights. I would always take a stand on them. And, you know, in some essence, even though they still violate them, and they violate the Constitution, they violate all rights, all laws even they violate, because they're so criminal. It doesn't matter. They do whatever they want to do, you know. It doesn't matter, you know. And really, so people are just preyed upon, you know. And it's, again, that fine line of civility versus, you know, underhanded criminality and the organized crime, and how it festers, really, because you have, and in these cases, they really have it festering in all these counties because you have to turn a blind eye Congress people. Or senators in the state. And it was only until I started complaining to all these people that I started getting letters, you know, like from Senator Dianne Feinstein, for instance. I must have 15 to 20 letters from her. And now she's a judiciary member, okay? And she would be like, I have no jurisdiction. I would get a different letter, some of the same letters. You know, I have no jurisdiction, you know, and none of them have jurisdiction. And so their behavior is to turn a blind eye. And in essence, they've aided major terrorism. They're not operating lawfully in D.C. whatsoever. And then you've got the media who covers it up. I mean, I learned early on how the media was covering this stuff up big time. And, you know, and I would still always go out writing letters. I'd be writing letters. If you look at the energy, sometimes when I look back off all the years, I say the energy that I had to expend to just complain and write and complain. And, you know, it's just mind-boggling. And still, here I am. I mean, where I even have a fraud rug, but it's so crooked and corrupt. Even I subpoenaed Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger because it was so bad. And to my trial because of the state bar, the criminal act coming out of the state bar of California, this criminal act coming out of the Supreme Court of San Francisco to cover up my matter. They want to slap this attorney's hand. And meanwhile, I've seen such tremendous harm. How, you know, I can't accept that. You know what I mean? I always was like, I'm going to keep fighting back, you know, and they want to harm you, you know, and, you know, there's so many things that go on, but that the foreclosures really now emphasize the real breakdown into all these counties, because now you have the sheriff's department so totally corrupt, because the sheriffs are all involved in the stealing of the homes.
Well,
and every aspect is fraud, you know?
Is it corruption, or is it just ignorance of actual laws?
I think it's more corruption than ignorance of laws, because they don't care really about the law. They don't care. They do whatever they want to do,
yeah.
You know, and that's why you're fighting like this uphill battle that you know, you're there for years on end. You know, they take people hostage in there. It's hard to get out of there once you're in there.
Oh,
unless
yes.
unless you're willing to totally just walk away, say I lost whatever I lost, and I give up and I walk away. You know what
yeah.
I mean? That's your only other aspect to this scenario, and people do it, you know?
Oh, yes,
just
exactly.
Say, all right. I'm just taking my lumps and I'm going.
Yeah.
But in essence, when you do that, what happens? It keeps staying put. You know what I mean?
Oh yes. I want to bring Suzanne into this also now. Some of her thoughts, some of her experiences, maybe some of the stories she's come across.
Sure. One of the contributors to the U.S. Independent is Scott Staffney, who's a friend of mine. He has been working to keep homeowners in their homes, and he just won his 41st case, which I covered in an article. And the reason why we collaborated on this article was because what goes on in the courtroom is very rarely ever discussed. And the reason why is because the evidence that is brought forth in the courtroom explains how the banks are doing it. And if the audience, if the homeowners knew how the banks are taking the homes away from the people, then they would be keen. They would be alerted to certain signals as they start to go through this process that is being forced upon them. That is the crucial moment when you agree to, like in the case of this one homeowner, in the 41st case, the gentleman's name is Brad Byrne. He was told by Bank of America to stop making his mortgage payments and that they would start the process of refinancing.
Is that right?
Absolutely. Now, what the homeowner doesn't realize is as soon as they start, the moment they have initiated contact with you in regard to your mortgage, they have already started the process of foreclosure on the other side of that. So while the person you're dealing with over the phone is allegedly helping you, positioning you in the right way so that you can refinance and sending you paperwork and having you sign off and telling you to stop paying on this current mortgage, and then they'll repackage everything and you'll start the payments on the new mortgage. Meanwhile, while you're going through all of this and you think everything's fine, on the other side, you know, think of it, one cubicle, you're there talking to this nice guy and there's sunshine and there's flowers and there's bunnies and everybody's happy. And then on the other side, there's a cubicle where there's darkness and there's clouds and there's lightning going on. That's the guy or the woman who is writing out all of the documents they need to foreclose on your house. And so one day you think everything's fine, you get slapped with a foreclosure notice. You have X amount of days to vacate the property.
Yeah. Well, there's two things that millions of people just don't know, not just here in America, because we have currently three times the amount of homes vacant is what there are homeless people. There are 17 million vacant homes here in America, and I think like 4.5 to 5 million homeless. That's just a travesty, if you ask me. But,
yeah, and the whole thing is fraud from the beginning. It's fraud at the inception, actually. It's fraud at the inception. And these banks, no one put a kibosh on stopping these banks. It's great that he got 41 cases, you know, overturned. But this has been going on a long time. And who aided it? The media. The media was never out there saying, stay in your home. Stay in your home. There was one congresswoman, a Marcy Kaptur, in Ohio. She was telling people, stay in your home. And people, what it is it's so much energy to fight this stuff. And if you are not, like, comprehensible to what's going on, and even to find an attorney, like this man has, this attorney, it's hard to find an attorney that goes against the system. Very difficult to find an attorney who will do that. And there are, you know, like, when I speak about something, I don't want to say everybody's, you know, a crook, because there are people who are not necessarily as crooked, or there are those who try to do maybe the right thing, but they're around a circumstance that is inherently evil and crooked. So, you know, so good people end up in these scenarios, you know, to a big detriment to them. But attorneys really trying to do the right thing, even though there has been, I mean, it's they're brazen. And like what you were just saying about Bank of America, they're doing this one thing, they're saying one thing, and they're doing another. I don't know how many times I've dealt with stuff, and these crooks are brazen. Their back offices, J.P. Morgan Chase, Bank of America, their back offices are packed with criminals, And that's all they're doing, is trying to find a way to get your property, you know, no matter what, you know. And really, anybody who's got money in these banks, to me, it's like frightening, you know. I mean, you know, because, you know, I mean, why would you trust anything even going on in your bank, really, you know? And what's tragic is, like, if I would put the figure up around 17 million, 15 to 20 million homes stolen easily in this country. And again, once again, it comes down to that civility versus really taking the action into your own hands. Because none of these people had a right to be stepping on your property. It's all criminal trespass. And it's fraud from the inception on the MERS system, which there's been ruling back a while. The MERS system was a system in how they would sell these mortgages, you know, to all these other banks or whoever with the derivatives and all that stuff, you know. That's all unlawful stuff. So everything they did, I mean, there's so many aspects of fraud in the foreclosures. And actually, like when they sell it to a debt collector, the whole debt collector system is a total fraud.
Yes, it is. I'm dealing with them right now.
You're dealing with it personally?
Yeah, I get two or three phone calls a day from debt collectors.
Oh, really? Well, I don't know if I should say this. Well, I'm going to say it online.
I talked to one the other day. I finally took a call and talked to one the other day. But well, they've got my home phone number now. I'm not sure how that happened, but they've probably done some searching or whatever. But I told her.
You have no contract with them. You had an article
that's what I told
the other day about Capital One. It's about coming to their home or whatever. And once these credit card companies or these banks sell the debt to a debt collector, or the debt collector system, there's a letter. It's actually called, it's called Debt Collector Letter. There's a website. It's called Bud Hibb. And he had a letter. I've used this letter numerous times with my debt collectors in the past. I've had a debt collector bother me, because, you know, they pushed me into poverty and everything, and from this California court, even with Governor Schwarzenegger subpoenaed, you know, and even the Attorney General Brown, because of my case, is just so corrupt. But, you know, so I had all my debt I couldn't pay, and I would send this debt collector letter to them. And in essence, they cannot write you again, and they cannot talk to you after that. And what happens is, what they'll do is they'll sell your debt again. They may sell it to another debt collector or another party. And then, like, I've had, like, I would have, like, maybe five or six people who come after me. And as soon as I send them the letter, boom, they cannot contact me again about that debt because it's unsecured debt. And if you were really to look at all how the monetization process was.
I sure would like to get a hold of that.
I'm sorry?
I sure would like to get a hold of that website and that letter.
Yeah. It's called Bud Hibbs. Bud Hibbs or something. It used to be on there. I haven't been on there in many years, you know, because this happened to me back years ago. But and I know so many people could have benefited from that, you know, because they're harassed by these people.
Yes,
and
we
had in there, Suzanne, a story about Capital One wanting to come to people's homes and all that garbage. That is like total garbage, you know. And it's just amazing what these people get away with. And it's the falsehood of everything in this whole society. I mean, it's like we're all looking at like this delusion or illusion, or if you want to call it, of what is really real and what's not.
Well,
you know, and it's, I'm sorry.
Yeah, people fall for this false illusion that somebody has power or authority over you, or there's never really been slavery, because slavery is just in the mind.
It is enslavement. It's an enslavement of a society.
Yeah,
you know, it's a breakdown of society.
Only because we are allowing it to happen.
Right, that's right. We've allowed it to happen, and that's why it's great. More, you know, when I started speaking out like back years ago, I would encounter people who were people fighting corruption in the courts and that. And, and they were people who've been fighting for many years already, you know. And, but now there is more of an awakening. And I think it's because more and more people are harmed from the everyday. And I think what happens is, because I could sit and I could talk with people who are harmed in so many different realms. But it's hard for people to really comprehend, because they've been, in essence, like indoctrinated. Like, you gotta believe, you know? You gotta believe this, you know? And when you really realize it's a sham and a half here, not even a sham, I mean, it's a total sham, and your whole government, your whole structure of government is a totally broken shambles. As
yes,
far
it
as
is.
The Virgin, and, you know, it's really, it's mind-boggling.
Hey, Cheryl.
You
know? I wanted to add in there a few minutes ago. No one has to leave their homes at all.
That's right.
There's a legal and lawful system, both legal and lawful, in every single country on the planet. One of my other networks, they just coined it the official offer. That's all they call it. What somebody can do is write down to their bank or to their loan institution what they can afford to pay each month, and that's a binding contract. If the bank or the loaning institution turns that down, they can say that this isn't acceptable. Reject this offer, or you have to pay your full debt each month. But legally, you do not. If you're in the arrears of your mortgage or your utilities or your cable bills, cell phone bill, home phone bill, any type of contractual bill that you owe, and you're down on your luck, you can write this offer up and send it to them. And if they...
Mm-hmm. There's also a thing called the novation. And I don't know if that was from on that website, but if you look at, there's a thing called the novation. And basically what you can do is say, you know, and this is, I'm paying you this, you cash my check for whatever, $50, you cash that check, my debt is...
That's what the contract is,
use?
Yes. That's what your contractual obligation is.
Yeah. My debt is... You know, paid in essence. And,
because you're showing intent.
Discharge is the word I wanted.
Discharge, yes.
You discharge the debt, and see, really, the whole debt system is built on fraud. I mean, the money. If you were to really look right at the depth of the fraud in this, it's astronomical, really. Because here they were created. You know, when you took out your mortgage, right? You know, you're borrowing a certain amount of money. So there ends up they were monetizing that. So then they had got money off of that, and then they are lending that money out to other people. The money that the banks have made on this is just astronomical, you know, and the whole Federal Reserve System, which is a shambles, and I hope they're removed here because, I mean, it's a disgrace on what's gone on.
Yes, but if they are removed, what's going to come in that's actually worse than they are?
We have to have a U.S. Treasury, a U.S. currency. It's a real dollar. It can't be built on this monetization system, you know, which is a total fraud, which...
And this crony corporatism. I want to bring Suzanne back in, and I don't know. I just want to bring her back in. I love to hear her voice. She's a lovely woman.
It's fabulous. It's just fabulous listening to the two of you. You know so much, and you're so eloquent, the both of you. So I don't mind sitting and listening.
Oh well, I haven't. I haven't found out whether Cheryl's going to be with us at the second hour or not. Are you going to be?
No, I was going to stay.
Okay, that's good. Well, we do need to give Suzanne some more airtime then.
That's right, Suzanne.
Okay.
No, Suzanne and Cheryl, 11 years ago in 2003, I went through a bankruptcy and a foreclosure myself. I was dealing with a bankruptcy lawyer and the bankruptcy courts for about 9 months. The lawyer told me of this system. He told me I could reduce payments on my credit cards, my utilities, my amenities, as they might be called. But he fell short of telling me that I could reduce my payments on my mortgage. And that was fraud and lying itself. I'm sure he must have known that I could also reduce my payments on my mortgage. But they wanted that property. I had 5 acres and a nice little home out on the countryside.
Yeah,
now,
I
fell upon some hard luck. I lost my job. I lost a very good paying job. I was making $60,000 a year back in the late 90s. I mean, that's not that's not very, very good for a lot of places, but my little area in Southwest Michigan, that's some good money for just a high school graduate at that time. But my point is, he fell short. He told me I can reduce my payments on all of these other accrued debt that I had, but he told me that I had to pay my full mortgage every month if I wanted to keep my house. That that was just out and out fraud and a lie.
Well, I mean, when we go, if I want to go back to sociopaths and liars and, you know, criminals, you know, I mean, I don't know, you know, from my experience with some really crazy people in courts, you know, you have, one of the things is lying. You know, I remember one day I was at court and I was listening to this lady going to her attorney, yeah, but they're lying about everything. And the attorney said to her, that is the way the system is. And it is, it's what they lie about everything. And I think that lying is what increases people's, I don't know if you want to call it, in their being a sociopath in some respect, you know, or because they become such chronic liars, you know. And I think the average person who's a normal person, like, you know, they generally don't really lie, you know what I mean? Maybe you have a white lie here or there, you know what I mean? But, and so for people who are around people who are lying all the time, it's really difficult, you know, to be around it. And it really is. And I want to bring up a story just from in this one court about at the, just to show some of the, how the harm is from sociopaths or liars or crooks, okay? And there's this one attorney that I had. She was maybe my husband's maybe third attorney, fourth attorney. And I'll say people's names because I know how crooked they are. And I you know, I'll speak. Once I know someone's a crook, I usually don't make judgments on people until I have enough information to really make a judgment. and say something, but this attorney's name is Attorney Lisa Degoni, and I have a nickname for her called Fang, okay? And this woman is a brutal woman, and I could go on about other brutal people, but I just want to say something about her in particular, okay? And it's that underhanded, you know, this is, again, this underhanded game that they play, the charade in these courts. And it's a lot to, you know, bleed you of money, okay? Everything is about bleeding you of money and taking it from your pocket to theirs. And now, when I encounter this woman, here I'm a victim of a crime, right? And, you know, this woman now has got to prey on me, you know, like I've had this other guy right before her, you know, and, you know, it's the same scenario again, you know? And one time I was in court with her, and we were in front of the judge, and courtroom was full of people, and I turned to her and I said, you know, you're nothing but a thief. And she just like looked at me like I was surprised to say this in front of the whole court.
Yeah, you know? She was she was actually surprised that the little common serf slave actually said something to the master. But
but you know, she's stealing from me, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So here you're dealing with this predator who's stealing from you, you know what I mean? And she is a very evil woman, okay? And then I don't know if it was the same time or if it was another time. We were leaving the courtroom. She's walking with my husband, and I'm walking like to the side of them. And she's like making like a comment, like, like this type of thing, you know? And I literally stepped right in front of her. And I went right in her face, and I said, "F you," really loud, right? And her skin literally went from pink, oh, I'm sorry, from white to pink, you know? So, like, if I was a violent person, I would have decked her, you know what I'm saying? But I'm not, and, you know what's going to happen if I decked her in the court, even though she's robbing me, who are they going to arrest? They're going to arrest me, you know what I mean? So it's that underhandedness, okay? So then meanwhile, I happen to be going to Kinko's. This is in San Mateo. And I started encountering victims at Kinko's, you know, because I'd be always making court documents, things of this nature. And here I am, and I'm at this counter, and there's this other lady. She's making copies of photo documents, too, standing next to me. And all of a sudden, I see a letterhead from this attorney, Lisa Degoni, and I said, "You know this attorney, Lisa Degoni?" She's like, "She's a crook." And I go, I know she's a crook, you know? And she starts telling me how that she hired her and how she's blatantly had stolen at least $150,000 from her and had done nothing for her. And her husband was like a very wealthy, this was a very, very wealthy family getting divorced. She had four children. She said, "I've paid her $150. She has taken every dime from me. I still don't even have child support for my children." And she's telling me how this other attorney who's working with her husband, which I know I've heard he was like a real shark type of attorney. But now here what's happening is this woman's having to go to her family to get help for money because she doesn't have any. So, I mean, they bleed these people. So now I'm upset. I'm like, I'm writing her. And I would write this lady sometimes. I go, "Hey, Fang," you know, and I would write her that. And I'd say, I go, "You're hurting this lady and her children? Like, what type of freaking psycho are you? You know, this is absolutely deranged, you know?" And I would say to her, you know, because whenever I look at anybody in any crime, when you look at any type of crime, where does criminal act come from? It comes often from how someone was raised or the predicament they're in, you know?
Yes, it does.
His children.
It comes from their ethical upbringing or their moral upbringing. And I don't really mean moral as far as religious either. You can be moral and still not be religious, but, Suzanne, I still want to try to get you in there somehow. I thought maybe,
I have one more thing I want to finish with this lady, okay? So, Suzanne, you can come in anytime. But I just want to finish something with this lady, okay? But it has to do with the grief, the trauma. Because I would even say to her, you know, here I'm a hypnotherapist, even, and I'm a grief counselor, I'm a crisis interventionist. And I say, "Fang, like, what has happened to you growing up? You know, like, did your mother or father beat you? What has made you so vicious? You know, that you got to harm these people, me, other people, right?" So then, okay, now I'm at one point, I don't know, I started looking at this lady, you know, and then I could have compassion to them to some degree, you know, but not totally a degree, you know what I mean? Because people make their own choices, and everyone has free will. So I start looking at this lady a little bit more. I'm like, there's got to be other complaints on her. There has to be. So here I am, I'm looking online, and all of a sudden, I come upon this story, and it takes place at her office, okay? Attorney Lisa DeGolmi's office. And it's about a woman who hires her as her attorney, and the husband has no attorney, okay? Now, I know from speaking with attorneys, they say, if you're with an attorney and you don't have an attorney, you might as well just have a gun to your head. Because they're going to try to harm you in some way, shape, or form, okay? And it ended up, what happened was, and this attorney, Lisa DeGolmi, she would always work with like a little sidekick. She'd have another attorney who would work with her in some respect, okay, so it was the two of them. So it ended up, they had tried to put a restraining order on this man. A temporary restraining that he was going to harm his children and this and that. Now, I don't know how true any of this, but they make up false allegations. And so this man, for some reason, this restraining order was not approved by the judge, okay? So within 1 week from when this whole incident happened, they somehow dragged this man now into Attorney Lisa DeGolmi's office. And they brought in a therapist or whatever. I don't know. You know, all the details, I'm not there. I'm just reading a news story. But what happens is, as this woman and this man leave Attorney Lisa DeGolmi's office, the man stabs his wife to death in the elevator. I mean, this is the harm people are sustaining from these psychos, you know, or deranged people that are in your local court. And, you know, and no one does anything to stop them. You know, so I can imagine the other harms and how many other people are harmed. You know, so when you look at one of these attorneys and or judges and the harm that they're causing, the harm is astronomical, you know, and no one does anything.
Yes,
you know,
it
that's
is.
Been the norm.
Yeah.
Nothing gets done.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
So, and then what was really sad is in the article at the very end, it had the family, the, like the family saying, we don't know how this happened. And I said, I know how it happened. I know how it happened because it's her. It's her. This woman is brutal. She's a viper. And I actually even wrote the family. And I said to them, I know I wrote this article. I read this article. And I said, you didn't know what happened. I'm telling you, it's from this woman. This woman caused this harm. And I put the investigation to seek manslaughter charges on her, you know, because I said, she is one evil person. And, but here she is, still free. Everybody's still free, you know, no one gets arrested. I'm not sure I don't like it,
yeah.
You know, and they just keep harming others.
Yeah, you know, Cheryl, but the main problem is, and what millions of people don't really realize is that lawyers and judges actually work for the corporation. I thought maybe you might try to jump in there, Suzanne, and, you know, talk about the American and the world corporations that actually own the courts and own the jailing systems.
Oh, sure. Well, first off, everything is incorporated. Everything.
Right.
There's no exception to that rule, okay? So going on that, this is business as usual. They never intended
right.
for you to have that property. They have this little thing that they want to do, and there was a professor in the 1970s who gathered up all of this information and created a map. And I know a lot of people in your audience have probably seen this map. It's got a lot of yellow, a lot of blue, a lot of different colored areas around it. There are interesting aspects to this map. One of the most interesting to me is the fact that there are large, exorbitant amounts of the continental United States allocated for non-human use. When I first saw that, I said, what does that mean? I mean, we all have an assumption of what that means. because we are emotionally attached. When they say allocated for non-human use, that affects us personally. We say, well, we have the right to exist because we exist. So why would I not have the right to be somewhere in the interior of this country that I belong to, that I'm a citizen of? So by looking at Agenda 21 and examining the foreclosures and what's been going on, we saw QE1, 2, 3, QE infinity, tapering, yada, yada, yada. How are they going to get a hold of all of that property? Think about it. It's almost unsurmountable, except if the bank is able to determine who wins on a non-judicial foreclosure, and if they have to go to court, if they have bribed the judges, they have control over who wins a judicial foreclosure. So here we have this entire scheme set up for this one purpose. And the purpose is the answer to how they're going to get all of this property. When I speak to people who are working in foreclosures and trying to keep people in their homes, and thank God there are a lot of attorneys who are seeing this. There's a lot of groups of paralegals who have banded together who will do work for you if you can't afford an attorney. With these cases, I definitely recommend that you seek an attorney. Scott Staffney is a great attorney in the state of Washington, and he is a constitutional attorney at that, and he knows a lot of people all across the country. So you can go to the usindependent.com and get his email address and his contact information, and he is open to emails. You can email me at occupycorporatism@gmail.com, and I will forward that information to him, and we will try and get anyone who needs any help the help that they need. The other thing that I want to bring up is we're ignorant of the law. We're ignorant of how these systems work. That's why the article that I wrote with Scott Staffney was so important. The details of how Bank of America took the property from Bradburn is essential. Because if we don't understand how it works, we have a topical understanding. We have a superficial understanding. It's like when we hear catchphrases and slogans. We attach an emotional meaning to that. And we don't realize that the logo or the slogan was an open template. It didn't say anything, really. It said what we wanted to hear. And so when we hear it, when we attach our emotional, it's sort of like, it's marketing. It's advertising. They start the conversation, they start the sentence, and we finish the sentence for them. If we finish the sentence for them, they've got us. So with these foreclosures, since people do not understand that like Cheryl mentioned, the MERS system is a database. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a database. And since the MERS system is not sentient yet, it cannot be an arbitration or an arbitrary member of the deed, the mortgage, or any of the paperwork. In the case of Bradburn, they signed off that the MERS system was supposed to be an arbitrary member during a non-judicial foreclosure. Now, a computer database system cannot do that. And they realized their mistake, so they scratched that off, and they said that Recon Trust is now that holding that position. However, Recon Trust is a subsidiary of Bank of America, so obviously they have a conflict of interest. Now, the judge in this case saw all of these documents because of the information that Scott Staffney brought and the homeowner. The homeowner was very prolific in making sure that he had documentation, and folks, that is the key. Document, document, document. Document, document, document. Keep all of your documents. Document every phone call. Document every interaction you have with the bank.
That's right.
Make sure that your phone records correlate with the time that you say. As soon as you hang up the phone, you start writing down the time that they called and everything. And even it's okay to be a little anal retentive. Save your phone records and maybe paperclip that together and put that in the file as well. So you have as much proof of what is happening to you as possible. And because the judge in this case saw that Bank of America was using a computer database and then their own guys in order to ensure on a non-judicial foreclosure that they would have, well, the end game of that conversation was, I get your property. The Bank of America got his property. Now, this gentleman is now open to the option of suing for damages, suing for any punitive damages, anything that the Washington State Constitution would allow him. And this is where the homeowner needs to be. See, folks, we bought into this idea, and George Carlin said it so beautifully. It's the American dream, because you have to be asleep in order to believe it. We had this grandiose idea. It was co-opted so long ago, I don't even want to get into it. But what's happening today as a result of it is the foreclosures market, is the QE infinity. And think of it, folks. Ben Bernanke and the Federal Reserve buying up mortgage-backed securities at $85 billion a month. What does that mean? Let me tell you what that means. It means that they hold all of those deeds and all of those mortgage notes in their hands. That's what they purchased. All of that bundled up securities, all of those mortgage notes, all of those loans, the car loans, the credit card loans. I'm sorry?
All by fraud, too.
Well, this is how they do it.
Yeah.
And it's important. You know, it's important to identify that it is fraud. But I'm really interested in how they do it. And so, folks, I want to educate you. So when you see these little red flags, don't dismiss that little thing that goes off in your brain and says, that does not sound right. Remember what I'm saying to you, because this will help you if you end up in that situation.
Yes. Suzanne, I know this is kind of giving a plug to another former guest, but David Craig, down there in Texas somewhere. I had him on back middle of last year, and he has a book called Clouded Titles, and I think his organization, he's a lawyer's aide or a paralegal or something like that, but he has lawyers on staff, and they've done a lot of research, and I think that they actually go into this.
Yes, they do. Yeah. He is a wonderful resource. Go look that up in whatever search engine you feel comfortable using. Put in clouded titles, and
clouded
you will
titles,
see that the MERS system is very, very sneaky. This started in 1996, folks. If you look, and I'll just give you a little snippet. If you look at your mortgage note up at the top right-hand corner, you'll see an 18-digit number. If it starts with the letter M, your mortgage was securitized. So now you understand that you may not see the clouds, but there is a storm coming if you're not already in the midst of it. That's a perfect, powerful place to be, because now you can start to get all of your ducks in a row and start to find out where you're going to get the money to get an attorney, and you can hit them before they hit you in court and assure that you keep your property.
Well, you don't even really need an attorney to do this, though, Suzanne. You can stay in your home all on your own doing, writing your own little legal letter, because your own handwriting and your own signature is legally binding in a court. But anyways, I also wanted to expand on that. I know some cases of one of my other groups over there in Ireland where some people have actually called up the second or the third or the fourth bank that bought the mortgage fraudulently and actually thanked them for paying off his mortgage from his original bank, and he has not got a statement from them yet. Over 2.5-3 years, he hasn't paid a mortgage payment yet because of that phone call. The other bank knew that they fraudulently bought that mortgage, and they've just written it off, as far as I know.
Well, we need to be aware of what our rights are and how they fit into the system, because we're fighting a system.
Well, that's the thing, is, see, they've sucked everybody in when you're taking out a mortgage, that you gotta, hand over your deed to the county clerk's office, and I call them the county clerk's office because there's a lot of crooked stuff going on in those county clerk's office. But really, in New York, and actually the original 13 colonies, there's what's called the allodial title. And everybody, in essence, is really just signing on. It's signing on, giving them permission to hold your deed and all this, and then to tax you. But you know what? You can pull away from that yourself. You know what I mean? And a lot of times when they've done these, you can hold it in a low deal file. I don't need to give it to the clerk court, and I will never pay a property tax dollar again for the crime I've, you know, witnessed from county clerk's office and just so much corruption. Money. I mean, I actually sued Jamie Dimon and J.P. Morgan Chase in like 2008. I mean, I can't tell you the criminal acts I've, you know, witnessed. And actually, you had wrote an article, Suzanne. There was something about safeguard properties, and oh my gosh, I could go on about them like you can't imagine. But talk about breaking and entering and breaking into people's homes unlawfully, you know, and it's a form of search and seizure under, you know, the violation of Fourth Amendment. And even for people who just don't have the money to pay, where the county clerk's office is, there was in Pennsylvania at one point, so many people who weren't paying their property taxes, right, because they couldn't afford to or whatever the reason was. And, you know, and then the town or the county wants to steal, you know, steal your property. Say you're $2,000 in arrears, but I want to steal your whole property here. And, you know, and they use no due process. They just feel that they can pass it off, you know, and that's part of the crime, too, in that whole realm there, on what's going on in your county clerk's office with the judges. And the non-judicial foreclosure process was totally created to help expedite stealing this property, you know. And it's tragic how many homes have really been stolen in this country.
Yes, it is,
you know?
Cheryl.
Oh, well, it's really terrible. Because, you know, I worked on Wall Street for many years, right? And, you know, so I'm an investment person. I've been around investments, you know, and there's things I've always thought about Wall Street in itself, you know, and there's definitely organized crime around and different things. But, you know, one of the things is, all right, you know, you have a company that, a fraudulent company, it goes belly up or whatever. You know, you lose money in an investment. You know, to be robbing people of their homes, throwing people on the street, where they just stole your money, where you put down a down payment. I mean, this is a bleeding of people.
Hey, Cheryl.
I mean, this is to destroy as many Americans' lives as possible.
Cheryl.
And
Cheryl, we're at a break.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we're at a station break. We'll be right back, everyone. All right. Welcome back, everyone. Yeah, it was a nice long break there. Sorry we couldn't talk in the middle there, ladies.
No problem.
That's okay. But anyways, while I got the platform here, I thought maybe we would, along with talking about psychopaths and sociopaths, maybe we can get into the discussion, Suzanne, about narcissism. Is narcissism maybe considered part of a one of those two groups, sociopaths or psychopaths? Suzanne, do you think? Or,
well, I wrote an article recently about an interesting study. They concluded, they were talking about internet trolls, and they concluded that they display Machiavellian traits of psychopathy. So the problem that we have here is we've got all these labels, and what do we do with them? And how do we apply them? And we're not paying attention to the problem because we're so busy trying to take care of the symptoms. It's like when you take NyQuil. If you watch the commercial, it'll tell you they take care of the symptoms, not the problem. So since we're focusing on taking care of symptoms and we're not alleviating the actual problem, the problem still exists. We just can't see it, or we ignore it, or we learn different techniques to ignore it. But the problem still exists. Now, with this study, what they showed were internet trolls were willing to manipulate and deceive because of a grandiose ego and self-obsessive behaviors that they displayed in their own personal life. And hiding behind a persona or an avatar on the internet is perfect, because then you are disassociated from the action. So you are already setting up the stage where you don't have to take responsibility for what you're doing, because it's not you. It's this other thing, other, you know, somewhere out there. And where is the internet? It's like this thing floating. Who knows? And they lack empathy toward others. And they highlight that their pleasure is derived from the suffering of others. This is a very serious condition because it's pervasive throughout our entire culture right now. We we have little girls and little boys being programmed through television to be narcissists. And we think that little girls wearing makeup and halter tops and bikinis is cute.
Looking like streetwalkers, yes.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's inappropriate. It's a child.
It is.
Children are adorable. They're not sexual.
There's a reason. There's a good reason why girls hit puberty close to the age of 13 or 14, because they're just not physically capable of taking on the emotional responses of sexuality before that time.
Children are not intended. They don't understand that.
Right.
They're happy. They're doing whatever makes them feel good. And I'm not discussing sexuality or exploring sexuality. That's what their intention is, to have a good experience in everything that they do. They're that Pollyanna, naive, skipping along happy until something bad happens to them.
Yeah.
And it's our job as parents and as members of the community to make sure that our children are taken care of. So we have this... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to mention that girls. Well, yeah, they're not supposed to think about sexuality until it actually, until they leave the home. But maybe I'm just an old prude. I don't know.
Well, there is virtue in the way we used to think, and there is a palatable. Go ahead, Cheryl.
I think there is like a total, like in some things in TV, you know, there's a degradingness of people of how they should work, you know, be or look, or, you know, you're too fat or you're too thin, or, you know, there's so many emphasis on your looks. But there's also a lot of, you know, evil, dark stuff, you know, that's really being depicted in TV, you know, violence, of course, you know, to make people want to be more violent, or, you know, even look at all the games children play, you know, the computer games and all that. You know, I saw a TV show that I just happened to flip through, and I saw that Tasho, I don't know, like a comedian guy, and he had this skit on. I'm not even going to say what it was, because it was so disgusting. And I said to myself, this is what this guy is, like, doing? You know, like, it's really, really, like, gross, you know? And so there's this degrading sense. And it's part of, like, the whole breakdown of society. And it's just like, I do grief work and stuff. And I generally don't like to put labels on people. Like, even a sociopath or a narcissist, even though they exist. But it's the medical community... that's created, or the mental health community. I mean, they have like a label for everything. The other day I saw something on TV and they had some new label for if you're laughing too much. Oh, well, now you got this. You
know? Cheryl.
Oh, my gosh. You know?
Cheryl.
I said, yes?
Do you know the changeover from 2013 to 2014 in the psychology industry, they actually invented over 200 new disorders to put in their books, in their medical.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. They're labeling crazies, in a sense. They're crazy itself, the psychiatrist and all that. I mean, there's a big thing when you look at the mental health of this society and what they're doing to create excessive trauma for people. I mean, I really took an issue up with, at one point, with the law schools, actually, that woman Charlotte, I'm not sure how you say her name, is a bird or whatever, who talks about the Board of Education. But there really is an issue with the law schools and the medical schools, especially those colleges, to be promoting the trauma that they're promoting, like in these courts or in society here. And then the medical aspect and how much mental health of people. Plus the medication, the pharmacy industry is in here. You know what I mean? They're making out like bandits, labeling you. So if they have 200 new labels, they're probably looking for 200 new drugs to prescribe. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, that's how crazy they are. You know what I mean?
Well,
and
you know,
it's all part of the breaking down of society.
And of course, you know that their solution to these 200 new psychological disorders is going to be a pill of some sorts.
That's right. You know it. You know, one of the things I had a hard time, I worked, I was actually a volunteer, and I had began volunteering at this grief center in 2002, 2004, somewhere in there. And I love grief education. I mean, and I think everyone needs to understand grief education, to understand trauma. This is not taught really anywhere. I've even spoken at colleges because they don't even teach it in college. You know, I mean, I've gone to colleges to speak on their behalf. And this grief center was built upon looking at people just as a person, you know what I mean, and helping the people. You have so many people with problems, just even over death, you know, and the loss of people, nevertheless, to be brutalizing people on so many other levels, you know. And then actually, because no one funds grief. No one funds grief, really. And it's very hard to get funding for that. Meanwhile, it's the basis of everything, grief. And it's not taught in schools. It's not taught really anywhere. And it's really like one of these types of things where everyone should really just know or be educated and work through their grief. And people would find healing more, to understand healing and how healing comes about and things of that nature. And but meanwhile, and what happened was because this grief center was going to go out of business, this other center came in. And they're a good center. I'm not going to say they're not a good center or anything. But they also come into more the mental health, looking at the mental health. You know, and I would sometimes do a grief group with someone. And, you know, I'm working with children. I usually generally did, when I did grief groups, I worked, it was a program called Healing Hearts. And I would work with different children ranging from 5 to 18. And I've done numerous Healing Hearts groups. And meanwhile, the parents are in another group, you know, with another facilitator. And, you know, once this part with the medication, you know, could someone use medication? Possibly. But when you start to say, well, I'm depressed, well, if someone just died in your family, you're going to be depressed. You're going to be sad. And it's that not looking at the emotional content, really. It's like the pill will subscribe and get rid of all your horrors. Like, I remember working sometimes with somebody, and it would be like, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, how depressed are you, you know? And meanwhile, I'm like, well, you know, depression is normal for your circumstances. You mean, and it's a different way of looking at things. And in essence, that pill, the pill becomes the Band-Aid, in essence. And it's really not always what the person really needs, you know. And I don't know, even as a hypnotherapist, I've had numerous people who I've worked with. You know, I could think of some, like a person who's like an anorexic, per se. And they could be now maybe 30, 40 years old. And they've been an anorexic for, you know, 20, 30, you know, 20 years or so. And they've been on every medication imaginable. You know, they've had psychiatrists putting them all on different things. And you know what? And you don't touch into that grief is, or what that trauma is, to help bring up the healing aspect of it, or what is really still bothering them years later. You know what? You just stay in the same cycle. And that's what happens to people so many times. I worked with an anorexic not long ago. And here she was in a psych unit. All these things are, you know, she's, you can kill yourself when you're anorexic, you know?
Yeah.
And I worked with her one day, and now this woman's gained like 30 pounds. And so, I mean, because I know how to work, especially in hypnosis. I mean, you can delve deeper into people's problems with hypnosis. You can do it on a
maybe I need a session with you.
I'm sorry?
Maybe I need a session with you. I need to, I need just the opposite there, Cheryl. I need to quit eating for a while, about, I don't know, 6 months maybe or something. But anyways, Suzanne, I wanted to get maybe some of your thoughts on the differences, or maybe your interpretations on the difference between a psychopath and a sociopath.
You know, I'm not clinically qualified to answer that question. I wish that I were.
I'm not either, but
I've written a lot of articles about psychopathy because it is pervasive, like I was saying before. It seems to be an acceptable form of communication in our culture. And it stems back to narcissism. You know, from an early age, these children are taught to think of their body image, to be aware of their body image, to be concerned about their body image. And this rides the wave of narcissism throughout their life, that they deserve better, that they should have whatever they want, that don't worry about how you get it, that's not important. The acquisition is what's important. You know, you don't have to teach kids about acquisition. I have two small children, and when they see something, they want it. And it doesn't matter if they already have it at home.
Yeah.
Sometimes they'll pick out a toy that they already have at home, but because it's in the store.
Exactly.
And because they understand, they fall for the marketing so easily.
Yeah. I'm sure I did that myself when I was a kid, but narcissism. That just basically seems to be a choice, isn't it?
The labeling. I think sometimes when you label people, and that's why I don't like the, you know, I would say to the dentist, sociopaths in a court, you know, but I just generally wouldn't put the label on someone because I really don't know, you know, because I'm not a clinician to diagnose somebody like that. And I prefer to look at people generally as they're lying or they're criminally insane or whatever. But because that's an always an obvious one. But the labeling, a lot of times, especially with children, I think really limits children, you know, because like say an Asperger's, you know, who's very antisocial, you know, and they'll say, well, oh, now he's an Asperger's, you know, and so what happens is you become the labeling puts them in it limits the beliefs, you know. I mean, it's almost like you can't become non-antisocial, you know what I mean? It's like you're antisocial for life.
Yeah, Cheryl.
Does that make sense?
Cheryl, yeah. You know, if you look at the clinical definitions of psychopath and sociopath, and you consider everybody on the planet, don't we all have a little form of both, and don't we also have a little form of narcissism?
Possibly. You could look at, people could have combinations of things.
Yeah. I'm sitting here looking at a definition for psychopathic personality, and it says manifests as amoral or and antisocial behavior, lack of ability to love or establish meaningful personal relationships. That just characterizes millions.
How they were raised as a child, and if you look at we've talked about Robert Stephen about the CPS issues with the children being stolen, right?
Yes.
You know, here you have children being stolen from their families. You know, sometimes it's, you know, now they're thrown into foster care. Maybe they're adopted by another family, and you know that in itself is such a big part of how you're going to be now, you know what I'm saying? So how is this child going to be raised? Maybe they're put with a pedophile or, you know, I mean, there's so many scenarios that go on where they're really breaking these families up. And it's part of, so you don't have inheritance. There's all these different reasonings behind it, you know. But it is really in the development, I do believe, with children and the traumas and the things you face. In your life and how if you become a criminal or not, you know, or if it's chemically imbalanced, if you're chemically imbalanced somehow, you know, that would be more than into the labeling or, you know, the mental health issue with a psychiatrist or psychologist. But I think the mental health community is not a really good community, and it's another failure system, you know, in our whole culture.
It's nothing but a monetarily based system to begin with,
and
monetary incentives, and you know, the more pills the psychologist can give out, the more money he's going to make. The kickbacks from the drug companies.
Yeah, well, the pharmaceuticals, and you know and if you look at how now the healthcare costs are astronomical, right? And how much, you know, the harm you're sustaining, you know, be just even in a foreclosure, a family who loses a home, you know, they lose all their money. I mean, you've got so much stress. I mean, I'm even from this chaos in the courts, I've sustained three intestinal injuries, you know, And, you know, I could have lived without it, believe me, you know. but, you know, stress harms the physical body. Trauma harms the physical body. You know, you're creating these scenarios in society by what you're doing to the people in society.
Yes, you are. You know? Yeah, well, you know, they also know that there is a collective consciousness, and the more they can keep us in a heightened state of fear, and the more that they can keep us down, our feelings and our emotions. Science has already proven that people that are in a state of fear or in a state of sorrow or worry, their immune system is being attacked by the body, and I think it was you. I mean, I could do things.
I mean, you know, sometimes I say to myself, you know, I look at my own person, you know, being in this event and being like, you know, like a hostage here with the government in some sense for how many years, you know, and I thank God for my healing capabilities and the knowledge I have that I acquired, you know, and from in healing and things like I know I can do for myself, for, you know, and really knowledge is really power, really. And there isn't enough for people. You know, I mean, there is a raising of consciousness. I do believe when people are harmed and stuff, there is a certain raising of consciousness, or people, well, their spiritual beliefs also will increase too. Because it's looked for, you know, be it whatever religion or whatever, comfort they find from a spiritual practice, you know, so that also does get heightened sometimes for people. You know, suffering great traumas and, you know, tragedy and things of that nature, you know. So, I mean, there are different things that occur.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, you know, the thing that really bothers me is the willful ignorance and the, well, just if you want to break down the word ignorance, it's the root word of it is ignore.
And there's lots of people who ignore.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that, oh, my gosh. And that is one of the biggest problems here, is that ignorance.
Yeah.
And the turn a blind eye behavior, and you won't speak up. And, you know, I would like, if we could, and I'm not going to say this is a sociopath or anything like that, but I do, if I could just touch upon, because I am an employee whistleblower here on this New Jersey Stronger program, which is Governor Chris Christie's program. And in New Jersey, and I would like to just touch upon something, and it is part of that ignorance, you know, and you know, and really, like I've said to Chris 50 months ago, you know, I said, why don't you just resign, you know, resign with some integrity, you know, but like he just started again recently his town hall meetings here, which he's lied to these people, talk about victims, you know, from this Hurricane Sandy. Where he's lied to them for months, and other people from in his administration, and the whole program that was structured, and he's starting that again, and then he's looking for money. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's all money, begging for money and dollars, and it is a lie, and he doesn't want to say it's a lie. That's his own business. Only Chris Christie can be responsible for himself and the program he developed. Okay. But I had some Sandy victims saying something to me, and I want to stress something, if I could, in the documents. Because one of the things, and it is that whole thing about ignoring issues. Like, I didn't have to be a whistleblower, but I have a lot of compassion for the Sandy victims. I mean, I'm dealing with these people, and I'm looking at all the harm being, the chaos and the trauma that has gone on in this New Jersey Stronger office for all employees, and the harm that was perpetrated here by numerous corporations, and the federal government through HUD is involved. I mean, there's numerous corporations. But some woman was saying to me something about facts, and, you know, I said, look at the grant documents. Those are the facts alone. And I just want to just read something in the grant documents. Just really some critical points in these grant documents. And, you know, only people who do acts can they really tell why they chose to do this program. And, you know, this program was definitely probably, I don't know if all the same things, but, you know, I even at the time when I was hired, I didn't know there was a lot of relationship to the Katrina Project. I knew there were people working in the program came from the Katrina Project, but I didn't really know much about them or anything. But in these homeowner grant agreements, this is for the Reconstruction, Rehabilitation, Elevation, and Mitigation Grant, which I found of interest to this lady. They had some people were speaking out the other day. Victims are lashing out over the failed recovery. And this woman called it the Ridiculous Restriction and Erroneous Management Program, which it's not, you know, when you talk about creating something that is totally bogus, or where your interests are really for your own self. And that is what happened in this program, for everybody else's interests besides these victims. And there's in the grant documents some of the key spots, and I just want to say this online here, are first off is there's a segment, number 8, governing law and jurisdiction. The rights and obligations of the parties and the terms and conditions of this grant agreement shall be governed by the laws of the state of New Jersey. The homeowner hereby consents to the jurisdiction of the Superior Court of New Jersey and agrees that any lawsuits of any nature pertaining to this grant agreement shall be brought in that court only. So that is the lower court, like the Superior Court. They're one of the more, there's all levels of criminality going on, but that is, there's a lot of crime in the Superior Court, you know, and it's limiting them that they can't even go into a federal court. Though, you know, the federal, you know, it's all under the same jurisdiction of a bogus system, but you know, at least it gave people some other availability. But then it has here the homeowner, and this agreement is made by the state of New Jersey and the Department of Community Affairs between them and the homeowner. So the people who are benefiting are the state of New Jersey or the Department of Community Affairs. And it says here, the indemnification, the homeowner shall assume all risk of and responsibility for any and all claims, demands, suits, actions, recoveries, judgments, and expenses and costs, and expenses in connection therewith, for any and all damages sustained by reason of property loss, personal injury, or any of the losses which shall arise from or result directly or indirectly in regard to this grant agreement. Homeowner agrees to indemnify and hold harmless the state and their respective members, agents, officers, employees, and servants from all losses, claims, damages, liabilities, and costs whatsoever, including all costs, expenses, and reasonable counsel fees incurred in investigating and defending such losses and claims brought by any person or entity or caused by related to arising or purportedly arising out of or from the property. The provisions of this paragraph 16 shall survive the expiration or earlier termination of this agreement. And then last, I want to bring up this other paragraph, number 17, legal action. In the event that a lawsuit or any action of any kind is instituted by or on behalf of the state against the homeowner related to this grant agreement, the homeowner agrees to pay such additional sums as a court may adjudge for reasonable attorney fees and to pay all costs or fees incurred by or behalf of the state for this lawsuit or other action. And those three paragraphs alone can cause a homeowner so much harm, it's unbelievable. Because, you know, if anything happens and anything arises, you know, they can easily bankrupt people, very easily. I mean, they steal people, the elderly, all the time, children, whoever. I mean, they could steal them, make them wards of the state, and they could steal the property. They could rebuild these homes and steal the property. And I wouldn't doubt, I wouldn't doubt some of this happened down in Katrina and down in that area. You know, and you would never know it from the media because they cover it up.
Yeah, Cheryl.
But this one, it was once I started to really read these agreements and see how these people are really signing their rights away to the state. I mean, you know, you could tell that this is just a plotted, perpetrated plan by numerous corporations, the state, under Governor Chris Christie, and this Commissioner Richard Constable. And when I look at the trauma that they caused in this office to these people who are victims, these agreements prey on these people, you know, so easily that, you know, I was like, I have to speak out about this. Plus, I know enough about the courts to know people don't get help.
Yeah.
So if something's happening to people, it's better to nip it in the bud now, you know, and try and halt what's going on than down the road where, you know, the intent is really to harm people more. No one's going to get any assistance. And it's just like the media's covered up what's going on in these grant documents or what, you know, Krusty was perpetrating here in this, you know, and he only could speak for himself, you know, and I think the man should resign and or be, you know, arrested for, you know, intention, you know, for creating what? Such even, you know, a scam like this.
Has he gotten back into the U.S. yet?
Have I what?
Has he gotten back into the U.S. yet? I haven't been paying attention.
Back. He just started, you know, he started his, you know, his meetings. There was a lady there. I saw a little film, and there was a lady with a resign sign. And he usually has these big, big state troopers who are like there as guards. And, like, she had her sign, and someone interviewed her, and she's like, he's a liar, and he should resign. And then you see this cop, he's trying to take her sign away from her, you know, and she was, like, pulling it over, you know? No, not letting you take it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, Cheryl.
And people wanted answers on why this Hammerman and Gaynor was removed and this and that. And, you know, he won't comment, or he's putting blame on the federal government, which the federal government's involved, and hopefully they're part of taking down businesses that have...
Cheryl, but you know, millions of people don't really know what subject matter jurisdiction is, and they also don't know once you register anything with the state, whether it's your child or your car or your home, you've effectively given them possession of it.
That's right. Registration is a very big issue, and it's consent. I mean, I couldn't even sign these documents, you know, with anybody anymore. You know, I was like, I can't sign these documents with people, you know, but it is, these people are given consent, and what they created in this office was these people. I can't even tell you the chaos that's gone on in this office. I mean, unbelievable. But they were really creating trauma between the housing advisor and the homeowner. So the homeowner is really looking for money. They need assistance, right? So now, here you're coming in to sign these grant documents. And I tell you, every time a person will come in to sign one of these grant documents, it's a mess. The figures are a mess. There's always problems. And it ended up, you know, here they're looking for the money. So you're telling them, all right, you're going to get this. But meanwhile, you're telling them this, and they're not really comprehending what they're signing, you know. They're just like, all right, I'm getting this. You know, they're not really comprehending. They're under duress. You know, they're victims. You know, they're really being preyed upon here. This is, this predator-prey thing. And that is really what's going on in this program, no matter how you want to slice it. And when I took a stance, you know, I really hoped to get other people to walk out. But, you know, they were calling everybody back. You know, they were, I made a very major statement with the office. And I can't sign any of these documents anymore. You know, basically, I brought in Obama. I brought in a variety of things. I try and help these people to walk out. And in instance, they are so, they're so, I don't want to say, a lot of them are older ladies. There's also older guys too, you know, but they're all, everyone's clinging to a paycheck, you know, and which, you know, I needed my own paycheck. Even I'm screwed in essence right now. I believe I'll be restituted. But, you know, I had like a one-year contract. We all had one-year contracts with the housing advisor position, which, you know, they took a hostile stance with me immediately when I came out with my letter. But it brought all this management, and some of it was these Hammerman and Gaynor people who I was even employed. I didn't even know I was employed by them, really. We never were told it, you know. So you don't realize you're even employed by this person, you know, because you were never told it, you know. but I was because their name was on my pay stub. But none of us knew who they were. But they create so much trauma. And in essence, you know, you want to feel like you're helping this person at this juncture, you know what I mean? But you're really not. You're helping to stab them in the back by signing this document, you know? Because they could have so many more serious harms that are going to happen to them, you know? So, I mean, it's just tragic what was created. And it's all intentional, and you know? So I hope, you know, I believe everybody, every corporation involved has to be removed. And I don't believe the state can administer this program because it's so crooked the way it was structured. And they basically, they were only giving out $600 million in this grant, and they sucked in a lot of people because now as everyone found to elevate and this and that, and they got all these people, then they'll apply. Oh, I got to elevate. You know, who's telling me I got to elevate? The municipalities, you know, all this federal and, you know, state, local governments, you know, and that's putting an infringement on the homeowner. Meanwhile, they never got adequate insurance to begin with. I could go on about that. I mean, I was amazed at how poorly the insurance was. And I mean, homeowners insurance covered absolutely nothing. If you had someone who had wind damage, or they can claim it was wind damage, they maybe get some, but you got nothing from homeowners. And the only way you got money was from flood insurance, and it was not great. And sometimes people were being bombarded by people with the flood insurance. I had one lady, she was telling me, she's like, I've paid flood insurance for 20 years, you know, and I paid $3,000 a year, which would be $60,000 over 20 years. I had this guy wanting to make me have me take $54,000. I have a lot of damage, you know. And then she went on with a whole variety of sagas, you know. And you know, I'm like, she's like, it's unbelievable, you know. And a lot of these people were shafted in a lot of ways too, you know. And it's really a tragic scenario of just a big group of people who are victims. And in the county where I was, or the office, this was Lakewood office, you know, there's so much destruction all along the whole Jersey Shore. But in this office, we had 40% to 45% of the victim. And the victims in this storm that came into here were probably at least 80% senior retired people, you know. White seniors too, so and then maybe younger people make up the other 20%, or it could even be higher, but predominantly a white group of people injured in this, at least from in this office. I know there's other offices that have, you know, different minorities in the area, but to develop a program like this, you know, I was an operational person, so I'm a real. You know, I always look at operations and the K-9, like I used to think, like when we first had people coming in here, it was like the last week of like June, and I had started originally as an intake person, and it was like all of a sudden our office was bombarded with people, and it was like, take whatever they had. It was nothing like to say, okay, this is what we want you to take from these people, or tell these people this is what you want. There was nothing like that. And I would often think, if there's people here from the Katrina Project, how come this is set up so poorly, you know? I mean, there's something seriously wrong. And the craziness that went on in this office is just unbelievable. And as far as reimbursement, this is something that they were always creating. Oh, that was their big thing. We're going to have reimbursement. And there's some reasons I could see people being reimbursed, you know, people who maybe who started to do work, people who just chose to do work, even if they were taking their savings or whatever, to just get their house rebuilt, even if it had to be elevated, even though it's choking them maybe now, they at least were moving back into their home, you know what I mean? And they were looking for a reimbursement back, you know, and I can understand that, you know, but the way they created it, I can't even tell you. I mean, oh my gosh, we had at one point when they were coming out with this program, I said to myself, holy cow, this is when I even about a month and a half before, I said to the government contacts that I know, I said, there's a serious criminal conspiracy going on in this place. And I said, there's serious problems here with this, with the builders, and it's everything is built backwards. I had one homeowner, he was an old, you know, older guy. And you had few people, like if you had like 70-75% of your home damaged, that you could either be, you could rehab it or you could reconstruct it. And so this man, I awarded him in this grant $150,000, okay, which was the max you can get awarded. And he was toying, you know, like, could he really do the reconstruction, you know, because based on the, you know, and the basic estimate of what the figures would be. Could I really do this? I may have to borrow money from my son, you know, with all this stuff. So then he actually met with builders again, or the contractors, or the REM project managers, and then he's telling me, he's like, you know, once I meet these guys, they're telling me I got to pay for this patio. This isn't covered. That's not covered. This is not covered. He's like, I don't know if I can do the reconstruction, you know. So people were being put into this program, and they really don't have any way to really substantiate what they're doing. I mean, everything is backwards, you know. They'll drag this out forever. And, I mean, the 1.8, they were only designating $600 million to this grant, and basically that went out the door. You know, they used it, and then I don't know, for the amount of information, they had a redo document. You have to redo this, you know, and redo it. And they came up with, they would always be changing procedures all all the time. I was like, oh my gosh. And people were always like, well, today's this, that's, you know, this is what's today. People would be, even employees would be crying sometimes. I remember one day I was looking at this woman, and she was upset over this project because they would change it on you. Anyway, and you're like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And this lady's crying. I'm like, and you have to just go, you know, you have to just kind of adjust to whatever they're doing because it's crazy. But people would get very upset. People would quit. And then they'd have these mass firings that go on, you know, so you never felt like your job was even secure. You know, so you felt like you were always, you know, under the gun in a certain sense, and we've been bombarded with people. But at the end of June, we started taking these people, and we had our systems, and there was like a variety of information. At one point, it was in the system. Then it was all gone. Anything that anybody brought in June was gone. You know, I had one couple who, it was constant. I was like, why isn't the office manager in here? Get this straightened out. What is the problem? Why are these documents missing, you know? And I'd be like, what are they doing to these people's financial information? Where is it going? You know, I mean, there has to be something going on here with it. And, these people were having to give, like, you know, it couldn't be complete unless you brought in every single asset you had, you know, and calculated and, and there was nothing based on from the, you know, the eligibility. Even they shut the eligibility department probably a month and a half or so before I even ended up getting ousted. But, there was just no rhyme or reason to anything. But this reimbursement program really just threw people for a loop. I mean, people were outraged, like you can't believe it. They were crying every day. You'd be in your office. You'd have people at your desk, and there'd be somebody at another desk with the person. The people would all be crying. They'd be going off. They were so upset, you know, because all they want, people would be saying, they're like, they just want to kill us. They want to kill us. And I'm like, I don't doubt they do, you know, because they're just going to steal your property. This is a total continuation of the foreclosures, I feel. Just a total continuation. And people were so upset at what they were doing in abuse. Just the abuse to these people alone in this office was mind-boggling. But I'm going to just tell you about a story about this one couple I worked with. And, you know, and it happens, these people are getting sicker and sicker, and they're having problems and this and that. And, they're traumatized people, depending on what happens. And but this one couple, I know they met them in, like, late, July. And they had been there already like three times or so. And all their information from June was missing. And because we would have notes so you can know what was scanned, but then you don't find it anywhere. And so here I sat down with them one day. I had a younger guy sitting with me. He was training to be a housing advisor. And I must have worked with them for 2 hours or so. And I said, okay, we took all their documentation and we give it to the scanning area and then they wait for it. And sometimes people will be there for hours on end and until they're done. And then I had an appointment with them for the next week and we were finishing some other aspect of it, which maybe was another 2 hours long. And I guess at that time I didn't look to see everything was in the scanning, you know, was that it was completed. So then I was maybe like, I don't know, 3-4 weeks later, I was looking at something for these people, and I look, and both days that I worked for these people's work, which was probably like 2 hours or so each day, nothing is there. There's not one document scanned anywhere to be found. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to call these people up. And the woman is sickly. She's got some health problems. And I'm like, you know, I'm so sorry, you know, none of the scanned information is in here. And I really, you know, to move you forward here, they need to have certain information. So you got to come back again, but bring all your information. We have to rescan it. So it ends up, they must have come in one day to rescan. And I happened to see the guy who was working with me. He sat in with me the other two times. And he's like, oh, I saw so-and-so. They were here. They came back in. He knew this. I told him about the scanning information is missing. And he's like, oh, yeah, they came in and rescan everything. Okay, oh, that's great. Well, then I go looking again now to look for it. I need to see if something's there. And one document's there, but all the other stuff's not there again. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm going to call them again. Come back again. I mean, they would make us look like we're retarded, in essence, you know. I mean, I could see how these people would think these housing advisors are crazy, you know, but it was really not us. It's really them and the systems and what they were implementing to cause this havoc constantly. I mean, I've never seen anything like it, really. Personally, I feel like, my God, what is going on here? So, I mean, that's just how I'm just looking at this to talk about the really the predator-prey and the sick criminality of what's going on here in this program, you know, and it's just really tragic what happened. And there's so many things I could discuss on this topic alone. But I was even saying in my government comments, I would say, I want President Obama, I want the IG of HUD, and I want Chris Christie. And I said, I want a meeting now. That's what I'm saying. This is like a month and a half before I'm even leaving. I'm like, there's some serious problems. It was right when the whole duplication of benefits was starting, which was a nightmare. I mean, people would come over with receipts, and these receipts, people were so sick of these receipts. I hated when I saw someone with a million receipts. Oh, my gosh. It's like, oh, my God, more of those receipts. You know, they'd have us counting all these receipts, and, oh, it was just an ordeal. And then all the information was missing. You know? You're like, oh, my gosh. You know, and sometimes people would have hundreds of receipts. It's like, oh, my gosh. You know, so it's just craziness, you know, craziness.
Are you doing okay over there, Cheryl?
What?
I've just been muted, letting you go there. But no.
I know. I just want to get something out because someone was saying that. And it's really the Grant Awards with a real giveaway on that, you know, on the real criminality.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to ask Suzanne, how much more do we have to put up with these type of people? I mean, what's going to be the solution to ridding ourselves of narcissism and psychopaths and sociopaths other than killing them, because that's still illegal?
Well, we have to recognize when we are being marketed to, when we are being incited to react, when we are under the spell of the Hegelian dialectic, and it comes real quick. I'll give you an example. I was over at a friend's house, and I was looking at a magazine, and I flipped to an ad. It had a candy bar on it. There was a little, off to the right, it said, hungry, with a question mark. I said, well, yeah, I'm looking at this candy bar. I'm actually kind of hungry. Down at the bottom left, it had the emblem for Snickers. There it is, right there, in one shot, real simple, real quick. If you're not paying attention, you don't get it. If you're not paying attention, you're going to say, yes, I'm hungry, and you're going to go buy a Snickers bar. Now, whether or not you're aware of all the chemicals that are in that Snickers bar, and it's really not a good choice if you are hungry, you're going to do it anyway because they asked you the question, they gave you the answer, and they made it very simple for you. What we need to start doing is making decisions consciously and not unconsciously. We need to take our emotion out of it. In fact, when we are incited to have an emotion, that is our cue that we are under the Hegelian dialectic. So that means that we need to take the advice that we've had from our elders. Why don't you just sleep on it? You know, you always had the right to hang up the phone, and most people don't know that. And the reason why they don't know that is because it's not monetarily advantageous for the other guys who are inciting you to react. When we stop reacting, when we consciously choose our own actions, then we are on the way, on the path to restoring this country as a constitutional republic, and then the world getting rid of the New World Order, because they operate completely on our compliance. And it is so simple, and it is so effective that we simply cannot see it, and we comply in ways we don't realize.
Well, and it is all about giving consent. It's you're giving the consent, you know, and that is it. And it's for anything in this government. You know, these people are giving consent here and even in these documents because they're not really reading the documents and they're under duress, you know. So they're being taken advantage of, you know, and so, you know, you can't be doing things to people like that, you know, as far as I'm concerned. And but it is all about consent, and that's how they've gotten away with everything. It's through our consent.
It is, absolutely. It's the absolute key. It's not the most popular answer, solution, because it takes the responsibility and places it back onto us. Because if we stop participating, the whole thing crashes. Seriously, folks. It's that simple. We have manufactured revolutions all over the world, and we're having them planned here in the United States in the next couple of months. The purpose of these revolutions is very simple. It's the new U.S. foreign policy. What they are doing is taking the actual good people of these countries and saying to them, I know you're disenfranchised. I know you lost your home. I know that your monetary value has gone down and things are more expensive. Here's a pitchfork. Here's a fire. Let's go storm the Bastille. Let's go storm the Parliament. Let's go storm Pennsylvania Avenue. And then somehow, when we beg them to give us what was already ours to begin with, somehow that will make them give us back what we already have. We have the power, ladies and gentlemen. We didn't give it away. We forgot that we had it. You always had the right to hang up the phone. You always have the right not to participate. If you see a commercial and they're telling you to buy something, you always have the right not to do it. If we make conscious decisions about who leads us, about how our structure is, our infrastructure is set up, of how our laws, how it operates on Capitol Hill, if we return us back to a constitutional republic where every single person has a voice and a right, and we stop under this blanket idea that somehow we are a democracy. Democracy is mob rule. And that's what we see right now. So there you go. There's your democracy. Now, if you would like to assert yourself as a sovereign person, make a conscious decision not to participate in the advertising, in the coercion, in the fake revolutions.
I agree. It is all about your own empowerment. And it's the thing is, you know, I do think, you know, like I've been around the government here longer than I ever cared to be. But, you know, I really do think President Obama is, you know, right now he's been playing this duality card, you know, which I can't stand. And I'm really done with it. But, you know, I do believe, you know, you're seeing throughout the whole world. And I do believe he is part of it. And I do want to give him credit that he is involved in taking this country back as an American country. And, you know, but it really, there's going to be some major changes there that are going to probably shock people. And it is taking down and not complying, not paying your taxes, not paying the debt, which is phony, because it helps them to stay alive and they're bankrupt anyway. And so, you know, your money, they're just taking in their money, laundering it. They're going all out. You don't know where your money's going, funding these guys. And on what they're doing to just make money and create it so they can keep surviving. So, I mean, this has played out much longer than I ever thought. You know, I'm like, where's the U.S. military? And I, you know, personally, I really didn't want to see the U.S. military come in here. But in the same sense, you know, I can't believe the rampant criminality exists here. It's like, you know, people need to be taken out, you know, and that's it. You have to restore justice. And even if it's like me, you know, I'm always like, I am bringing the law. I am bringing justice back here, you know, and we all can do that. And we all should be doing it, you know, and the more the Constitution is brought forward and attorneys who are changing, you know, to be constitutional attorneys, you know, to change these courts. The courts have not been common law courts, constitutional courts. I mean, we've been really had and duped in so many ways. So,
hey, Cheryl.
And it is. Yes.
I just wanted to say we only got a couple minutes left here.
Okay.
Yeah, the 2 hours just flies right on by when you're having fun. But anyway, so yeah, I want to let you go ahead and take a minute and maybe just a simple solution yourself, and then plug all the sites you can be caught at or seen or heard or where people can find your readings or your writings.
Okay, I have two personal websites. Mine are www.corruptionamericanstyle.com and www.areyouawaremedia.com, which is my blog. And then I've been sharing my content here with the U.S. Independent. That's how I've met Stephen and Suzanne. So, which have been, you know, I love people who are people taking a stand here and fighting back, and which I congratulate both of you as true Americans. And we need more Americans taking a stand.
Well, no. You know, I cannot just stand by idly and not share things that I know about these people. Maybe it's just me. I don't have the bystander effect in me. I guess what I'm trying to say, but I've always been quite outspoken. I know it doesn't really seem so on the radio, but I do have a big mouth and I shoot it off quite often, but.
I do too.
Yeah. Suzanne, where can everybody find you?
Well, I'm just so proud, ladies and gentlemen. These are two wonderful contributors of the U.S. Independent, the usindependent.com, an independent news agency. We're good, sourced, wonderfully incredible information that is blossoming and honest and integral. And Cheryl Kennedy and Stephen Roberts are members of the U.S. Independent, and I am thrilled to just be in your presence because I did most of the listening because it's wonderful to hear two individuals who care so deeply about what they're doing and to hear that passion in your voice. I'm sure the audience is enriched after having gotten to know you, Cheryl, so much better. I know I am. Whenever we've spoken on the phone and when we email each other, I always say, well, that's a kindred spirit, and I'm glad, you know, that at least somebody feels the same way that I do. Thank you so much for everything that you do.
Thank you, too.
Wow, that's okay. Unfortunately, I think I did a lot of the listening too. Cheryl was...
I have a big mouth.
Cheryl was on a rip there for a long, long time. But OccupyCorporatism also... .com.
OccupyCorporatism.com. I publish 7 days a week, and I also contribute to the U.S. Independent, and we have some wonderful experts and activists, attorneys and professionals, and... Dr. Rima Libo is a member, my good friend Charlotte Iserby, my wonderful friend Thomas Sheridan, and Kevin Galley, who is Deputy Prime Minister in Canada. Wonderful contributors. And, of course, Stephen Roberts. And so that's where you can find me.
Wow, that's great. that's where everybody can find me also. Not Occupied Corporatism. U.S. Independent, as well as CancelTheCabal.com, CancelTheCabal.net. And quite a few others I don't have right up here in front of me right now, but someday I will have them up in front of me on a piece of paper where I can tell everyone. But I do appreciate both you women coming on today. Very, very great, stimulating conversation. I've learned a few things I didn't know about psychopaths and sociopaths and narcissism. And maybe if we can, help educate people on how to combat these people that we're dealing with. Like I said, killing them is still illegal, so we have to do something else.
They have to be arrested. And you can't just, you know, it's just amazing to me how rampant it is, just like in every court and county, and, you know, I mean, it really is, it's tragic. And, you know, it's just so unnecessary for people to feel they got to harm people to make their living, or just rob people, or you know, own everything. And I mean, it's really been a tragic event for, I think, our country. But I hope good things are coming, and you know, and that we all do well, and this country is back to American. And you know, I think a lot of people are going to be really surprised at what goes on here and the facade that they've all been living under.
Well, I hope so too, and I do thank the two of you for coming on again.
Okay, thanks for having us.
All right, so I'm going to let the studio go here. There isn't any scheduled program on yet, so all I have to do is just let the studio go. So, till next Sunday, everyone. This is Stephen Roberts, and the show is Cancel the Cabal on Revolution Radio. Please go hit that donate button. All of us need donations, especially the station. They're that's what we live on, is donations. So thank you very much over there. And
thank you.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.